31 degrees, and it's time for the best 5 minutes of the day. Jason Kahn's on the line from his home in Eau Claire. Good morning.
Good morning.
You know what? Great audio quality from you yesterday and again today. So sometimes with the phone, it's not the greatest. I don't know. What have you done to enhance it? It's fantastic.
Well, I had been wearing a headset when I talked to you, and so I got rid of that. And yeah. I'm just talking on my phone now.
Okay,
so
this is really good.
That seems to be going better.
Good. Thank you. Thank
Glad
you.
To hear that.
We had our connection with our guy from Detroit yesterday, and that was like he was underwater, so that wasn't so good. So, So First John came up a couple of times on Sunday, and this is going to lead me to your book, your new book, Letters to the Beloved, as well, because
yeah.
So at church, somebody had mentioned about they're facing some serious health challenges, this individual, and mentioned about being unsure if they were going to heaven, and so I said, First John is the book for you. It is the book that helps us the most in terms of the assurance of our salvation. The word no is like close to 40 times, and it's kind of the defining verse, 1 John 5:13. These things are written so that you might know you have eternal life. And so, right. Lo and behold, my wife's been wanting to do this Discovery Bible study with our family. We finally did it, actually, on Sunday. I know that sounds very Christian radio. Wow, you're just a role model family. No, completely not, but actually, we just finally did this. And it was the first chapter of 1 John. And I wished, because yesterday in my devotion, I'm like, what did Jason come up with in his devotional commentary, Letters to the Beloved, which I have my copy. And I read it and I had a great time reading it and underlined a bunch of things in it. And I started to really, like a baseball mitt, you get a baseball mitt and it's new, but you got to use it and you got to break it in. And I'm like, that's what, you know, eventually I'm going to have underlining all over this thing. Isn't that what your hope and dream would be?
Yeah, you know, it's interesting that you say that, because even in, it's a pretty big book. I mean, it's almost 3 pounds in the paperback edition. But I intentionally left margins that people could write in. Because I want people to underline. I want people to wrestle with what is written there, make notes, make underlines. As I've said before, go back to the Bible with it to see, am I writing something that stirs accurately or does it feel incorrect? And if so, why? And so, again, I really want people to interact with the story of the Bible, and I'm hopeful that Letters to the Beloved is a tool that helps them to do that.
Yeah, and so I wanted, having read the chapter yesterday, I wanted to just deal with some of the things I highlighted, and I don't think we're going to get too far beyond the first one, because regarding, again, 1 John, you talked about, you say, I love how C.S. Lewis described the creation story in his book, The Magician's Nephew, where Aslan sang creation into existence. So I love that concept, too, and am not remembering it as well. So people remember Aslan maybe from the Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe, maybe the movie, or they've heard it. But maybe tell us about The Magician's Nephew, about him singing creation into existence. That's beautiful.
Yeah, so The Magician's Nephew is the book written by C.S. Lewis as part of the Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe, or the Narnia series. And it is meant to be kind of this image of the creation story. And it's about these two kiddos who end up falling through this portal and end up in a place where Narnia is being created. And there's a dawning light, and they can see the great lion Aslan, who represents the Christ figure in the story, and he begins to sing. And as he sings, creation itself emerges. Plants begin to appear, and animals begin to appear. And you know, we read the creation story, and God said, "Let there be." And for me, the magic, or the beauty maybe of the thought of God singing really stirred me as I thought about that. So for me, again, I think when I imagine God creating the world, it was an act of beauty. It was an act of imagination and creativity from this infinite God that we love and serve.
And again, I'm just thinking of this off the top of my head, but I mean, we talk elsewhere, it talks about through Jesus and for Jesus, all things were made. Without him, nothing was made that right. has been made. I think John chapter 1. And even Colossians talks in that regard. And so what about the Trinity singing collectively? You know, that's also a thought. So.
Right. You know, and I think the notion that this relationship of beauty existed between Father, Son, and Spirit mm-hmm. for all eternity.
Yeah.
I suspect there was some music there, and still is.
Right. That's a beautiful thought.
You know, I was just going to mention, so I think it's Zephaniah 3:17 says that God will mm-hmm. sing over us with mm-hmm. loud singing. And so the notion of God singing isn't some completely off-the-cuff thing that C.S. Lewis came up with. That appears in Scripture. So
well, and so now I've got the challenge of what songs to follow with. And so, and then we still have the good morning and the call today because I've got Creation Song from Fernando Ortega, but I also just... Ellie Holcomb's new song, I Don't Want to Miss It, is about what you just referenced, Zephaniah 3:17. We're going to go with that. Jason, thank you. Good stuff. More tomorrow.
Sounds good. Talk to you tomorrow.
All right, we don't have an A&W restaurant in Eau Claire anymore. We used to out near Oakwood Mall, but we've tracked it down kind of in the Baldwin area. Stanley, you set up in Barron, Caleb.
Yes, Highway 8.
And this is an interesting story. Now, A&W versus McDonald's, I mean, we know McDonald's beats them, you know, in terms of just business
sales.
Success. Business
right.
success. I mean, root beer, A&W, runaway.
Blows
I don't know if you can even
water.
Get root beer at McDonald's. But so here's the deal. They have about 1,000 locations, A&W, worldwide, and over 500 right here in the good old U.S. of A. And they're trying to get noticed with something brand new. They just announced it October 21st or so, called the 3/9 pound burger.
3/9.
Yeah, why would they do that?
Kids do your fractions.
Yeah, simplifying that fraction, that is a 1/3
yes.
burger.
Okay, well, in the 1980s, they don't want to talk about that. Because in the 80s, McDonald's Quarter Pounder, 1/4, was ascending in popularity and rival A&W sought
Quarter Pounder.
Beat them
right.
at their own game by releasing the 1/3 pound burger. So the plan seemed unbeatable. More meat, more burger, bigger size,
right.
same price, can't lose.
Can't lose.
However, the burger flopped in part because lots of people were unable to discern at first pass that 1/3 of a pound is more than 1/4.
And this is what sparked No Child Left Behind.
Wow.
Okay, because 3 is smaller than 4.
That's what they said. Focus groups after the botch launch, like New Coke, were clear on the fact. They said, well, 4 is, after all, bigger than 3.
So people legit thought that a 1/3 pound burger was smaller
yes.
than a 1/4
yes, they did.
Pound
yes.
burger.
I was going to say I
America.
Weep for our country, but I can totally see myself doing that.
So now go out and get you a 3/9 burger.
So yes, and that's the idea. And they just announced this, and they're coming out. This is the reason that A&W announced that they'll relaunch the 1/3 pound burger, instead billing it as the 3/9 pound burger. So the 3 is bigger. The 9's bigger.
9's bigger
it's
than 4.
It's just all bigger.
Whoa. Maybe we will get another A&W of sales skyrocket.
So here's the thing. I talked to an area pastor one time in terms of where they were going to put their money towards nonprofit giving outside of the church. And he had said, you know, if you just keep talking about where the problem is, you know, people keep having problem at this part of the river. He's like, you got to go up the river.
Oh,
do we,
right.
Do we track this back to math class? I mean, is this where somehow all I'm not looking to lay blame, but I'm just trying to say it's maybe that question my generation asked. And I think kids always ask it like, am I going to need to know this in real life? Yes, the answer is yes.
When it comes to drive-through purchases, yes, yes.
Fractions, you know, so understanding.
Okay, so this is part of my weight loss problem is mm-hmm. that I'm thinking that by eating a 1/3 burger,
yes.
I'm not eating as much as a 1/4 pounder. Okay.
You're eating more.
I'm eating more. Mm-hmm. Oh, now I've uncovered the problem.
All right, let's talk hair, people.
Hair. Oh, my goodness. A Dove survey found very few women actually love their hair. Preach.
Oh, that's sad.
Only 7% between the ages of 18 to 65 admit to loving their locks.
Huh.
I have to say, I am one of those people who do not love my hair.
And here's the thing. I think I, as a guy, am decidedly ambiguous about my hair. Didn't always love my cowlick growing up, but it wasn't... I mean, if you see how short a time I spend on it each day, you'd be like, yeah, he doesn't care that much.
Okay, guys, but here's my question. How many times a day do you think about your hair and how it looks?
Not a lot. I mean, I've got a new style, which I've liked and I've landed on. But, I mean, I just, you know, you go like, to the bathroom, maybe just
Is it 10 times?
I'd say 1 to 2.
What?
I mean, maybe. I mean, if you see a reflective surface, if you're going somewhere out in public, then you look at it real quick.
Okay.
Whether you do anything about it is...
67% of the women in this survey think their hair has a mind of its own. So true. It's a crapshoot. You can do the same thing every day.
But
someday you'll have a good hair day. Someday you won't. 20% say they have skipped a social function because of a bad hair day. For sure. 45% prioritize their hair over breakfast every morning. Yes. And I have to say, when people are like, let me get a picture quick, I get a sinking feeling like, oh, my hair doesn't look good. So it is a preoccupation.
Conversely, hair does look good, are you more apt to look for picture opportunities?
That's so smart. I bet those people are like, selfie, let's do a group photo.
But what
I
if
bet
it's, they're you have a having, friend, you know, a group of ladies or gals or whatever. And the one is like, I'm having a good hair day. Let's take as many selfies as we can on this outing. And the others are like,
okay, I'm
only
thinking
if I'm
back.
A hat.
I think you're onto something. Because usually the person who wants to take a picture looks really fine that day. Wow. You just peeled back the curtain of my whole social structure.
Again, from this Dove survey, one final interesting note. 35% of women would rather spend extra time with their hair than extra time with their pillow, meaning they're giving up sleep and breakfast.
Yes.
To try to battle with their locks.
Listen, Rome wasn't built in a day. You need to get up. Get that hair going. And that just kills me that you think about your hair once or twice a day. I'm thinking about it constantly. Constantly.
You know what? Here's the thing. We just need MyPillow to come up with some hair care products, and that's going to solve
the
world's issue.
I want one of those satin pillowcases they say are really good for your hair.
There you go.
There you go. Phil Jacoby, you just know. At
Christmas
the top of
his list. He's got gorgeous curly hair, and he doesn't even appreciate it. He gets this little Superman curl ringlet, and he's like, oh, I need a haircut. I'm like, do you know what I would do for hair like that?
Good hair is a gift from God.
I've just perfected an electronic hair bat analyzer, which may hold the key to this baffling question.